Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. Today I'm talking with Kristen Ciccolini from Good Witch Kitchen. She is absolutely amazing and I love everything she talks about and stands for. When I saw her work initially on Instagram, I knew I had to interview her for the podcast and I was not disappointed. We talk about nourishment, we talk about rituals around food and how to strengthen intuition. And we talk about emotional eating and our relationship with food. We also talk about Halloween and what we can do to help children around this time of year to really tune in to what they're eating and eat in a mindful way, even when it involves candy. We also, at the end, talk about sugar addiction and her course, which I would highly, highly, highly recommend checking out, and I will link up in the show notes. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Welcome to Nourish and Shine. Today I'm talking with Kristen Ciccolini. She is a certified culinary nutrition expert and a holistic nutritionist, which I absolutely love. And I'm so excited you're joining us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here too.
Yeah. So I have a million questions for you, but first, could you tell our audience about yourself?
Yeah. So like you said, I'm a holistic nutritionist, culinary nutrition expert, founder of Good Witch Kitchen. That's the name of my company, cooking class instructor, speaker. I do lots of different things and I'm based in Boston.
Awesome. And I have to ask, how do you become a certified culinary nutrition expert? And what all does that involve?
Well, I can tell you how I got there and then go a little bit into it. How's that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So about 5 or so years ago, after years and years and years of eating junk food and dieting, feeling bad about myself and letting that cycle continue on, I finally decided to really commit to better habits and exercise on a regular basis. And that came first. And then at the time, there were a lot of free classes around the Boston area. So I started going to them, made some friends who I would go with every week. And eventually we ended up at these classes that were half workout, half brunch, where the instructor would share a really delicious breakfast with us and talk about all the ingredients and the way they benefit our bodies. And I was fascinated. And I had to get more. So I started to understand what I put in my body and what kind of effect it actually had on me. And you know, you're told, but you don't really listen, you know? So I just wanted to learn more and more. And I just kept, I did some self-study online and I ended up stumbling upon the Academy of Culinary Nutrition. And even though I didn't know I was looking for it and that was a path I wanted to go down, I read all about it and it was exactly what I was looking for. So I enrolled in their certification program and then 3 years later, I'm running my own business. So culinary nutrition, it's really implementing nutrition knowledge in the kitchen. So it's really what I love about it is that it's just more showing versus telling, because I can just spit out information at you all day long, but you're not going to implement it if you don't know how. If you don't know what your way around the kitchen, if you don't know how to even do a simple recipe, it's just not going to happen. So I really liked that it incorporated the cooking aspect as well as the nutrition aspect.
Oh, I love that. That makes so much sense. And I'm like, totally ready to Google that. So, and I think you bring up such a good point that if you can do it or show it or teach it, totally different than just talking about it. So as far as the holistic nutrition part too, and being a holistic nutritionist, can you talk about really what is holistic nutrition?
So my approach with people is not just the food that you put in your mouth, but all the other ways that we're nourished. So what else is going on in your life? Are you having issues in your relationship? How's your work balance? There's so many other things that contribute to our food habits that it's really important for me to actually get that from my clients and talk to them about how their lives are going, you know? It's not just about the types of food that we're eating. Like if we're completely stressed, even if we're eating the healthiest food, we're not absorbing it because our gut is stressed, you know? So I really try to focus on several areas of my clients' lives because health is holistic. It's not just one thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's something I think is hard to understand sometimes for people, that it's not just like eating the right food, but it's also a mental state and like how you feel about the food. And like, there's so, so much more to it. And I think it's really neat that holistic nutrition brings that all together.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that, like, I even take into consideration the foods that people don't like. So if you don't like broccoli, I'm not going to make you eat broccoli. You know, there's so many other places that you could get those nutrients. And it's just taking into consideration the actual person and their likes and dislikes and all their other preferences.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really individualized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you mentioned nourishment. One question I usually ask at the end, but I wanted to ask you at the beginning, is what does nourish really mean to you?
Nourish to me means something that makes you feel good and whole and fulfilled. So we don't always pay attention to how foods and other things that we consume in our lives make us feel. So it's important to slow down a bit and start to notice. You can get nourishment from food, from sleep, from a night out with friends, from spending time alone with a book, a bath. Whatever makes you feel connected to yourself in a fulfilling way is what I find nourishing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And if you were to talk about, like, what are a few of your favorite nourishing foods?
The ones I like to go to are seasonal. So it's always just fun to get a little bit festive and enjoy some fresh berries and all the amazing produce you can get in the summer, and then apples and pumpkin in the fall. You know, if you have these things and they're seasonal, it's more exciting and it's more nutritious too, because it's more likely that what you're getting is local and you didn't have to travel far and have it lose nutrients along the way. And you're also supporting local farmers and small businesses. So it's nourishing on a few different levels, and also on your wallet, because seasonal foods are less expensive, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so this is fall time. Are there certain fall foods that you really go to, or recipes that you love to talk with clients about?
I really love soup.
Yeah.
So that's a huge one, especially in the colder months. It's just such an easy, quick thing to do, and you can just customize it so easily. Like, you always start with the basic components, right? The celery, carrot, onion, just throw that all together and then build from there and just see what's on sale that week. And just, you can always use it as a way to use up leftovers, right? There's so many different things that you can do with it, and it's so meal preppable. That's a big thing of mine. I love meal prepping. And you can freeze it for the future if you want to. So yeah, soup is a huge one, especially with seasonal foods, because it's an easy way to the future.
Yeah. And so as far as soups go, are there certain things, do you get into like bone broths, or are you more into like a vegetable based soup, or are they all good?
So I would say I'm not primarily plant-based. Most of my diet is plant-based, but I do incorporate animal food sometimes, and bone broth can be a very healing food. So I definitely incorporate that sometimes, especially when I notice that I'm starting to feel sick. I will immediately start putting some bone broth ingredients together in the slow cooker, and then just have like multiple quarts of that available for me for the next week or so. It's really healing, and I love having that and using that as a tool medicinally.
Oh yeah. And can we talk about just kind of a basic bone broth recipe or some of the ingredients you might throw in there?
Yeah. So I use the bones, but then I also use whole wings. I know some people like to use a whole chicken too, but it's whatever you can get. I like to use the wings because there's a lot of the cartilage in there, so it'll extract a little bit more of the collagen and all of that. Apple cider vinegar is important to put in there to help extract it a little bit more. But just basic stuff, so the celery, onion, carrot, some herbs if you want to, parsley, salt and pepper, of course. And that's also another good thing to just throw whatever leftover vegetables you have. So what I'll do sometimes is I have scraps, veggie scraps left over from meal prepping and stuff. So if it's like the tops of bell peppers or onion skins, things like that, that you would normally throw away, I'll save that in a container in the freezer. And then when I'm ready to make a broth, whether it's just vegetable broth or a bone broth, I'll put that in there with the bones in the crock pot, and it just adds a little bit more nutrition, and I didn't have to go shopping.
Yeah, I love that. I do that too. And my husband always pulls out bags and is like, what is this? Yeah. Like, it's a little of everything. Mm-hmm. But it is a really super easy way to make a stock. So I definitely agree. As far as other tips for people just kind of getting comfortable in the kitchen or who may not be there yet, do you have some go-to tips for things that people can start out with that are pretty easy to get them comfortable with cooking?
Yeah, I usually tell people to just pick one or two recipes to start with, because I know with meal prepping, a lot of people think that they have to make 21 meals from scratch, which is just not good. You know, you'll just get overwhelmed, and nobody does that anyway. So, I just tell people to pick one or two recipes they want to try, something simple. You can look in a cookbook or look on your favorite blog. And, also to choose the meal that will make the biggest impact in your week. So for instance, for me, lunch is something I just do not want to think about. I'm busy during the day. I don't have time to like just chop stuff, chop up the salad and put something together in the middle of the day. So for me, if I have lunch prepped, that's going to make the biggest impact in my day. It'll save me the time in the middle of the day. So just choose one that sounds simple to you and choose one that will make the biggest impact. And also think about what appliances you have available, what kind of kitchen tools you have, if you have a good chef's knife or a blender. Just make sure that you have the tools available for the recipe that you choose.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So let's talk about meal prepping. I know that's something you said you definitely are into. Can you talk about what all that involves and how it looks for you?
Yeah, so it varies depending on how much time I have during the week. Sometimes it's planning out, like I can be a little bit type A. I put things in spreadsheets, and just make a whole plan from there. But basically I kind of do it in four steps. So the first step is what I call research. So basically that's just looking in cookbooks or looking on blogs or Pinterest, wherever you go to find recipes. Or maybe it's just looking in your fridge, seeing what you have and deciding what you want to cook from there. And then the second is to plan out a grocery list. So just write down everything that you need through all the recipes and shop your kitchen first. So look in your pantry, look in your fridge, see what you have available, and then go to the store so you can save some money. And then another thing would be to make a prep schedule. So this is for the real type A people, for the people who have the time to do it. But if you're just starting, this is a good thing to do too, just so you can get a handle of what needs to be done first. So what you'll look at is all of the recipes and see what takes the longest what'll take the longest. So say you need to cook some rice that takes like 45 minutes. So you put that on first and then get everything done that's quicker while that's cooking. Or you put some vegetables to roast in the oven and then do all the other quick stuff while that's roasting. So you just kind of piece together the day. Yeah, I mean, there are little tips and tricks here and there, but it can be something as involved as that. Or sometimes when I'm busy, and it doesn't have to come out of my kitchen, it can just be as simple as writing down what my meals are going to be for the day and from where. So whether it's a chia pudding that I prepped for breakfast, or maybe lunch, I go to Sweetgreen, and then dinner, I'm going out with friends, so it'll come from this place, you know? So it doesn't necessarily have to come out of your kitchen, but I find that even if it doesn't, if you plan ahead and just know where your meals are coming from, you're going to be way less stressed, and you're not going to be panicking around mealtime, trying to figure out where to go, wasting your lunch hour, standing in line, because the decision's already made. You know where it's coming from.
I love that. What great advice. And I like the flexibility in that you don't have to meal prep every single meal. You can just plan like, hey, this is where I'm going for this meal. And mm-hmm. I like that knowing, like you said, it just removes stress and like decision fatigue and just makes your day flow easier, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So as you probably know, I love talking about nourishment. And so when you prepare foods, are there things you do to really optimize like the nourishment you get out of the food?
So there are things that you can do. We can get into all the technical things, like how tomatoes, for instance, they increase their nutrients when they're cooked, or soaking nuts and grains will make the nutrients more absorbable by your body. But a large focus of my approach is intuition and listening to your body. So I know it's not the most specific answer, but I find that the best way to prepare your food is truly whatever feels best to you. So some people thrive on a raw vegan diet, and other people have digestive issues with raw foods. So unless you're getting into the real nitty gritty, like the tomatoes and all that, the easiest thing is just to do what feels good and what tastes good to you.
I love that. So let's talk about intuition. Can you dive more deeply into intuition and what that kind of looks like when it comes to eating?
Yeah, so that is definitely a huge part of my approach. And I have different rituals that you can do as well to connect a little bit more to your intuition. So basically, the reason I do this is because the diet industry has convinced us that we can't trust ourselves and trust our bodies to tell us when we're hungry and full. So a lot of us have lost that part of our intuition along the way. And in terms of nutrition, it's really listening to what your body's telling you in terms of the food that it needs. So that's also separate from the food that your mind might want. So it's understanding hunger and fullness signals. But like I said, a lot of us have lost that connection and can't hear or feel those things anymore because diet culture has consumed us. So like some people might think, what is even a hunger signal? I don't know, you know, but you can get that back, and it'll take time and a little bit of practice, but it is possible. So to do that, it's important, I think, to have foods that nourish your brain and give you energy. Like healthy fats or dark chocolate, which can boost your serotonin levels. There's vibrantly colored foods like leafy greens. So that'll have B vitamins that you need for energy production. So there are more foods in these categories, but nutrition is really your foundation for strengthening your intuition. And like I said, I have some rituals that I suggest you can start to incorporate into your routine. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Definitely.
All right. So some are food focused and some are just to connect to your intuition in general, which will ultimately help with that. So the first one is meditation. So quieting your mind and giving yourself space for intuitive messages to come through. This can help you listen to your body's language. And after meditation, after you do this a little while, and when you start to feel particularly chill after meditation, really in tune with yourself, you can ask your body what nutrients it needs or what kind of self-care it's craving. So it might sound a little bit woo-woo, but you might be surprised with what comes up. So you might want a specific food or to do an activity like stretching or walking in nature. And this is especially helpful when emotional cravings arise. You just want to listen to what your body is telling you. You can also train your senses. So by that, I mean just playing around with them, isolating one and focusing on it and sort of training it to be heightened. So one thing you can do is like the next time you're in a crowd, quiet your mind, turn off your phone, take out your earbuds, keep moving while focusing on a sense like smell or sound. And of course, do this in a place where you feel safe turning off the other senses, but focus on smell or sound, and it can help you tune into messages that are always there, but that you typically ignore. So if you are going through a crowd, maybe you just stop and focus on smell, and you're smelling all these things that you never smelled before, because you're just like powering through trying to get home, you know? So that's just one way you can just sort of train your senses to be a little bit more heightened. Another way is to keep a journal. So this is just a personal record of the messages that you get. So even if it's something as simple as thinking of a friend right before the call, right before they call you. I know that's happened to me so many times. It's such a weird feeling, but that's your intuition talking. So I find if you acknowledge it, that reinforces for you that the information you got is authentic, so that the next time you can trust it more when it's not just silly things like your friend calling you, but maybe something a little bit more serious. And then this one, I like to incorporate a little bit of woo-woo. You'll notice that, but
I love that. I'm all about it.
So this one may not be for everyone, but you can use tarot cards. A lot of people think that you use them to tell the future, but some people do, but that's not how I work with them. I use them as a way to organize my thoughts in a way that I can see. So just to visually organize things. So the imagery kind of helps me think of things in a different perspective. It's kind of like a conversation with myself, and just like keeping that journal is sort of a conversation with yourself too. It's just a ritual that enhances your relationship with yourself. And then the last way that you can work on connecting with your inner voice is to eat mindfully. So if you've been on diets your whole life, knowing when you're actually hungry and when you're actually full can be pretty tough. Those signals are gone. But the way we can get back in connection with that is through mindfulness, which is just about presence. So being in the moment when you're eating or about to make a food decision, it's an invitation to slow down and pay attention to the details. So think about, what did it taste like? What did it smell like? Did you even like it? Sometimes we're eating these things, and when we think about, we actually think about that, we're like, this doesn't even taste very good, you know? So it's more just being present in the moment when you're eating, when you're craving something, just being a little bit more mindful in that respect. So yeah, those are some of the rituals that I like to share with people.
I love that. And I have so many questions around this. So I think those, first of all, are great. As far as the meditation piece goes, are you like, how did you get comfortable with meditation? And are you sitting completely quietly? Are you doing like a mantra? Are you like, I guess how does that look more specifically, especially for someone who's not really there yet with meditation?
Yeah. So if it seems hard, good. You know, like that's the whole thing with it is that it is going to seem a little bit hard. So the way I started with it, I started using the app Headspace, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And that was just guided meditations. And then I just learned how to do it. They tell you exactly what to do. You know, if you notice your mind starts wandering, just bring your attention back to your breath. And that's the practice. The noticing that your mind wandering is the practice. So if you keep noticing that, if you keep getting frustrated with yourself that your mind's wandering, the point is that you're noticing that and you're bringing it back to your breath. So if it does seem hard, just, you know, you're doing it right. And I find for me personally, the guided meditations were good for getting me into it. But for me, I like to sit quietly and just, I put a timer, just so I can stop myself after a little bit. But usually I only last about 10 minutes because I do get pretty antsy. But still, even 10 minutes a day is enough to help you feel a little bit more grounded and help you approach your day a little bit differently, a little bit more calmly if some stress arises. And I think everyone can do it as long as we just allow ourselves a little bit of time to devote to it.
Oh yeah. Meditation is so powerful on so many levels. And one question I had around that too was, you mentioned asking your body what it needs. And I think that is awesome. And to have that kind of quiet space to listen is huge. But in what way do you ask, or like at what point in the meditation? I know that's getting super technical. And then also, how do you kind of tease out, like, is this my mind? Like, am I telling myself this is what I need, or am I really hearing, like, truly my body?
That's a good question. So I usually tell people to do this like when they're either like towards the end or like when they're finished their meditation and they're feeling pretty in tune with themselves, and just to ask yourself that question. And I mean, you just listen to whatever comes up. And if it's, I mean, if it's a cookie, it's a cookie.
Right. You know?
But then you can also go into those questions thinking, or some questions that I have people ask themselves when emotional cravings come up, or when they think it's an emotional craving, is just, what am I feeling right now? Am I stressed? Am I upset? Am I angry? You know, there's different types of hunger. Emotional hunger is a big one. But I mean, you could just try and eat whatever your body is telling you and see if that felt better. If it didn't, then maybe that was probably the emotional cravings talking. If it felt great, then great. And sometimes it is a cookie.
Right. Oh, that's so interesting. And that makes a ton of sense. And also to have that like beginner's mind and like be willing to experiment and like see if that's what your body needed or didn't.
Yeah. And that's the fun part. It's all just one big experiment.
Yeah, totally. And then as far as the heightened senses, I love that as well. And I love, like, personally, I'm a big gardener. And so for me, like going back in the garden and like tasting the flowers and, you know, like smelling everything and looking at things and like appreciating the color is really the way I think I do this. But I love the idea of doing that in a crowd. I never even considered that. And like, as far as heightening your senses, do you do that then when you're eating as well? Or like, how do you apply this to kind of your meals?
You can, absolutely. So you can, this is the mindfulness aspect, right? So if you are sitting at your table, turn off your phone, turn off the TV, no looking at a book or anything, like just focus on the meal. And you can ask yourself those questions. How does it taste? What's the texture like? What's the temperature? You know, all these aspects about it, and thinking and using all your senses. What does it look like? What does it smell like? All these things that we just don't pay attention to because we're like wolfing down our meal on the way out the door, or we're in front of the TV. And, you know, sometimes that can be fine, but also at the same time, if we want to work on our mindfulness, these are the types of things that we want to pay attention to, just really playing around with our senses and actually using them instead of numbing them with all these different outside stimulations.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think it's all too often you're out eating or something and you see people really like focused on their phone or working or whatever and like scarfing down their food. And I personally am guilty of this sometimes too, where you eat something and then you're like, what did I just have? So I think that mindfulness aspect and really tasting it and thinking, like you said, about the temperature and kind of the details of it keeps you in the moment of what you're doing.
Yeah. And I'm definitely guilty of being on the computer, looking at my phone while I'm eating. But I mean, it's just a practice to try to get into. And especially, it's funny, what we were talking about eating seasonally earlier, it's funny, try doing this with like strawberries in the winter and see how you actually like them. They're probably not that great.
Oh yeah. That's a really good point. So as far as tarot cards go, this is something that recently kind of, became interesting to me. And the one question I have, which maybe, I don't know if this is a good question or not, but the question I have about it is, how do you learn tarot? I actually ordered some and they don't really come with a lot of instructions. So how did you get started, or like, where do you recommend going to learn for people who are interested in using the tarot cards?
So the best place is really just yourself. So all this talk about intuition. So really what I like to do is, I mean, I don't know every card back and front yet. I mean, it's still a practice for me and still very much learning. But what I like to do is when I pull any card, I look at it and I try to interpret it on my own first. How does this card make me feel? What do the symbols in the card mean to me? And think about it that way. And then what I'll do if I don't already know the meaning of the card, I'll look it up online. So I like BiddyTarot.com. She has a ton of very in-depth explanations. She'll talk about what the card actually looks like, all the different symbols in there, and then her interpretations of the card. And that sort of helps me out too. And a lot of the times your intuition's pretty on point. Your interpretation of it is usually pretty right. I mean, if you're looking at the card and you're seeing all these different symbols that make you feel a certain way. Also, sometimes it'll be opposite of what she's talking about. But it's how you interpret the card that is most important, because it's the way you're thinking about things. It's helping you change your perspective on things. So if this card is making you think a different way about something, it's helping you process those thoughts, you know? So it doesn't necessarily have to be the official interpretation of it. I just find playing around with both of those helps me sort of process the thoughts in my head.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good explanation, because that's one of the questions after I got them, I was like, oh, I didn't really consider how to use these. I should have done a little more research. So yeah, that's super helpful to know. And I love the intuition piece in that. And it just makes so much sense. So I'm excited to try that out. As far as emotional eating goes, I know this is a huge, huge area. How do we kind of change our relationship with food? And like, I guess, how do we start to change that whole like cultural piece too, as far as the diet culture goes?
Yeah, so this is a huge deal because so many of us deal with it. Even the last few years with all the heightened emotions around politics, it's causing us to be super stressed on top of all the other things we're stressed about. You know, a lot of those feelings can translate into cravings. And so many people I talk to have a really emotionally reliant relationship with food. And emotional eating can be good, like celebrating a friend's birthday or toasting to a promotion. You know, those are things that you're doing. You're happy, you're celebrating, you're in good spirits, but we don't want to rely on it and constantly soothe emotions with food. So what it does is confuses our hunger and fullness signal. So like I was talking, we kind of lose that relationship, and it's more of a cover up of what we're feeling than a treatment of the root cause of those feelings. And depending on what you're eating, it can really lead to some health issues down the road. So how do we change it? Just starting to pay attention to the foods that you're eating and how they make you feel. So kind of what I was saying a little bit earlier is just asking yourself what you're feeling when you get a craving. So I have people ask themselves these questions. So what am I feeling? What can I do to soothe that feeling, and what can I do in the future? So for instance, if what you're actually feeling is stressed, then why do you feel stressed? Then maybe it's because you are overwhelmed with things at work. And what can you do to soothe that feeling? Maybe I can ask a coworker for some help on this, you know? And so it's just like a non-food way to soothe something. But maybe sometimes you'll find out that you're just actually hungry. And in that case, you definitely want to eat. You know, we don't want to deprive ourselves of anything, but oftentimes there's something underneath there. If we're looking for food at times, maybe a little bit after we've just eaten, or, you know, when it's not mealtime and we're still searching for these things, it can actually be hunger. If maybe you didn't eat enough at your meal, or it wasn't adequately balanced, or maybe it's just that you're stressed or sad or angry. But the point is to just be curious about it and thinking about where those feelings are coming from.
I love that approach. And that brings up for me a lot of times, like after eating a full dinner where I know like I am full, the first reaction is, oh, I'm ready for dessert, you know? And you're like, wait, am I actually really hungry for dessert? Or is that just, you know, whatever coming up for me. Mm-hmm. And so how do you work with people to kind of change that over time, or to actually kind of pinpoint their cravings or like make sense of their cravings?
I usually have people do a food and mood diary. So we don't do it for too long because I don't like tracking food, but this helps me see where they're at and see any patterns that they might miss, or, and it's also for them to have an awareness over what they're actually eating and paying attention, starting to pay attention to how it makes them feel. So they'll just go in the app that I have and they'll just log just a brief summary of what they ate. So it's not like logging every last teaspoon of something. It's just like, okay, I had an omelet with this, this, and this in it, or I had a sandwich with this in it. And they'll just write their mood down before and after and log where they ate it too. Sometimes it's at a desk, sometimes it's in the car, sometimes it's actually at a kitchen table. this is really good for them to start actually seeing what they're eating, because a lot of the time when we self-report, it's not usually accurate. So they're doing this in the moment and they're paying attention to how they're feeling before and seeing how the food made them feel after, and just seeing all those different patterns, and just having that awareness piece is really, really key to being able to make any changes. Because if you don't know where you're starting, you don't really know what to change.
Absolutely. And so when it comes to diet culture and kind of our relationship with food, I know I've talked with quite a few people lately, like just in my day to day, that have said things like, I eat to live and I don't really enjoy food, or I don't really enjoy cooking. Like, how do you change that and identify, like, or start working with people, I guess, around kind of that relationship with food and changing kind of that always being on a diet or always striving to eliminate, you know, something?
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. I mean, I'm still working on it myself. I feel like I'm much, much farther along than I used to be, and I'm much more aware of things now. And I try to be accountable for the way that I talk about things. But we live in this society. I'm not immune. You're not immune. No one's immune.
Right. So
it can be really hard, but the very first step is just acknowledging it. And then I guess with people who don't like to cook, I mean, not everyone's going to like it, but we all want to be able to enjoy food. So that's a tough thing, is when they're eating this diet food. The usual thing I hear is like the steamed chicken, or the unseasoned chicken breast with steamed broccoli. Like, everyone thinks that they need to eat that, but there are so many delicious things that you can have. So one of the things that I do with clients is when we work together, if there are any particular health issues that they're dealing with. So for instance, if there's a hormonal imbalance, or if they want to have a cancer prevention diet, something like that, I will select certain foods that have nutrients that support their health in those areas. And I'll make a list for them. And it's definitely not the only things that they can eat, but certainly foods to prioritize specific to their health goals and concerns. And from there, I will offer them recipes. And I always ask the types of foods that they like, things that they don't like, because I don't want to force feed them anything, any cultural foods that they enjoy. So we can maybe include some recipes from their own culture that they like. I always try to take into consideration things that they will actually eat, because if I give them a plan full of things that they're just like, oh, you know, it's not going to happen. So I really try to work with them and focus on what they will realistically eat and use the foods that will be most nourishing to them. And I also take into consideration the types of appliances they have and whether they actually look like cooking. So I'll give them pretty easy stuff if they don't like cooking. So it's really like, that's another thing about being holistic, is just taking all those things into consideration to get them focusing on their health in a more positive way, in a way that actually feels enjoyable.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I love that you bring up the plain chicken breast and broccoli, because I think that's all too common, that, you know, what you view as healthy, or what people view as healthy, is oftentimes so bland and boring and really not that healthy. And I think adding the flavor and like the fun and the enjoyment back into eating is such a different experience and so much more nourishing than like kind of working around deprivation. So The next thing I kind of wanted to talk about is this is the week of Halloween. And I'm wondering, I know you have a course out on sugar addiction, which I would love to talk about. But with it being Halloween and centered around candy and children, do you have any ideas for like a holistic Halloween or things that you can do for children this time of year?
Yeah. So something I like to do with clients who have kids is just to have them get involved in the kitchen. So maybe if you're having a Halloween party, having them help make some of the foods, like maybe, I don't know what they do at Halloween parties, peel grapes for eyeballs, you know, some fun stuff like that where they can get involved and just be part of the process. I mean, just in general, that's a helpful thing to do to get them to eat healthier foods is to get them involved, bring them to the store and let them pick out foods on their own. But maybe one thing for Halloween is to ask kids the same questions that I was talking about earlier with the mindful eating. So maybe just sitting around and asking how the candy tastes, you know, what does it smell like? What's the texture like? I mean, it'll be exciting to them because they're focusing on candy, right?
Yeah.
And it also slows them down. So they have a little bit more of a chance to feel full, and it gets them thinking about their food too, which is just another way to just help them learn those mindfulness habits.
Oh, that is really great. I love that. So at the end of the interview, I love to ask everyone, what's one thing that you do consistently for self-care?
Sleep and water. I know that's boring, but it's so essential. I try to get at least 8 hours of sleep a night. So I keep track of it on my Fitbit. And I get so excited whenever I hit 8 hours. I got almost 9 last night. I felt great today.
Oh, that's good.
And I always have multiple beverages on my desk next to me. So when I wake up in the morning, what I'll do is I'll fill up a quart mason jar with water and just keep that next to me on my desk. I'll make some herbal tea. I'll have that next to me as well. I have like a whole area where all my beverages go. So it's just, I mean, I have no excuse not to hydrate, and it gives me energy. I don't drink coffee, so I know that's annoying for a lot of people, but this actually, it gives me energy throughout the day, and it just feels good. So those are my two big essentials.
Oh yeah. I totally share the hydration thing. So one of my girlfriends I work with and we both always come lugging at least like 3 different containers into work of beverages. And it's so heavy, but like I can't do it without it. So, you mentioned teas and herbal teas. What are some of your favorites?
My favorite, so I've been getting more into herbalism lately. So I've been studying a little bit and learning all these different herbs that I've been trying. But my ultimate favorite is the one I've been drinking for like a year straight is the throat coat tea. I don't know why. I just love the flavor. And that's my favorite one that I just like to drink in the mornings. I also like hibiscus tea. It's very tart and flavorful. That's really great as iced tea. And it's also good for collagen production. So it's a good beauty tea.
Oh, I love that one. And it's so pretty in pink too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I drink that one. I think the traditional medicinals brand, same as probably the throat coat.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's so good. And it is really good ice too. So awesome. One last question I wanted to ask you about. So your brand, the Good Witch Kitchen, can you tell me a little bit more about that and how you came up with the name and kind of what are some of the services you offer?
Yeah. So honestly, at first I just really liked the sound of it. But yeah, when I started to think about it more, it just made sense because previously, I mean, witches were known as healers. So before the witch trials, before they became demonized in society, witches were the women in your community that you go to for natural healing remedies. And I look at my work in the same way. I'm helping women manage their health naturally through their diet and sort of sharing healing knowledge with them. So I think it fits pretty well. And for what I offer, I mostly do private coaching and it's all over the phone. So I have clients from the US, Canada, even one from Switzerland. I'm international, baby. Yeah. And that's the benefit of working remotely is I can reach more people. And I also teach nutrition workshops, healthy cooking classes. Obviously, that's locally. And I do group coaching. So like you mentioned a little bit earlier, I have an online course on kicking sugar and carb addiction.
Yeah. So tell me more about that.
It's a 6-week online program. So it's online course format and it's all video based. So, I mean, I really enjoy courses that are that way and I learn more that way. So it's all video based and each week there's small challenges that you can do to sort of keep you engaged and continuing on the path. And it's pretty much everything that we talked about today. So it really starts with that awareness piece, learning your habits and how they make you feel, how certain foods make you feel. Then we start to introduce more nutritious whole foods and learning how those make you feel, getting more awareness around those. And it's for people who are experiencing all these issues that are related to blood sugar imbalance, whether that's anxiety, depression, or more serious things like diabetes or hormonal imbalances, infertility, PCOS, things like that. A lot of the times people don't realize that it might be associated with blood sugar imbalance. So that's a big draw, is that it can be so many people because the food industry has us so addicted to these things. And it's not that we want to demonize sugar. It's more just focusing on readjusting our relationship with sugar. Because of course, you can have dessert every day, be healthy and feel great. And some people who have dessert every day continue down that path and have more and more all night long, you know? So there's different relationships that we have in sugar. And this is really about reexamining it, redefining it, and creating a relationship with it that is more sustainable. So it goes over the course of 6 weeks. And I find that's a good time. It takes the time that it takes to actually get into the process and really understand your body. And it's all online. And there's also a Facebook group to go with it. So you have my support throughout those 6 weeks. And and if you're joining before Halloween, we can always talk about that candy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's just hearing you talk about that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I think so many people, including myself, could benefit from a course like that. And I think you do it in a really nice, holistic way. Again, being so thoughtful about the emotions and intuition and so many of the different pieces beyond just like eat this and don't eat that.
Yeah, definitely. It's a huge, huge part of the process to have that awareness and also to have what we go over is your why. So understanding why you even want to do this, why you want to make a change, just getting to the emotional root of that to keep you motivated and also like to help you shift your mindset. So that's a huge thing, is to know why you're doing these things and how the foods are making you feel. I find that's essential in shifting your mindset from something that's temporary and an actual diet into something that's really sustainable and something that you do for life.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That is huge. So it has been wonderful talking with you. I think this has been incredible and you have so many great pearls of wisdom that you've shared. I really, really appreciate it. And I know our listeners are going to want to connect with you. Where can they find you?
I am most active on Instagram. I love Instagram. It's just Good Witch Kitchen. And you can find me at goodwitchkitchen.net. And if you're interested in the course, it's goodwitchkitchen.net/sugar.
Perfect. And I will link everything up in the show notes. Thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for listening to Nourish and Shine. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that you'll leave me a review on iTunes so that more people can hear the podcast. I'd also love to connect with you on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I would love to hear your questions, so please send them my way. Also, you can check out my website. It's amysopola.com. I hope that today's interview provided you with some inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and to live a whole, vibrant life. Please join me again next week for another amazing interview. Have a wonderful week. The information provided on this podcast is for educational purposes only. It's not intended to diagnose or treat any disease or condition. Please do not apply any of this information without first speaking with your medical provider.